僕全然ジェームスじゃないのに立ってますけど実はねこのバイスプレジデントがシェフが来てくれて、ちょっとね僕実は個人的に結構かなりシェフが好きで、彼実はこのね彼のプレゼンテーションが送られてきて見たんですけど、内容めっちゃいいですよ。なんでかっていうと、やっぱりシェフさんってずっと前からデブオプスやってるんですよね。だから経験とかカスタマーの数と経験が全然違うんですよ。だから彼のケーススタディとかもすごいし、あともう一つ僕はすごい気に入ってるのは、彼はどういうことをトークしてくれるかって言ってたかっていうと、そのねシェフとかを使って、僕はよくそのデブオプスの時に、開発の時にテスト駆動開発が重要だよっていう話をしてます。でも彼はそれをインフラでやってくれたりのデモとかもしてくれるみたいですね。っていう話で、あともう一つこれ見てくださいよ。こうなんか空席があるじゃないですか。もったいないと思いません？もったいないよね。もったいない。で、はっきり言ってこのケーススタディを世界のワールドクラスのですよ。その事例のケーススタディとかすごい最新のテクニックとかを、見れない人は申し訳ないですけどアホなんで、でもここにいてるみんなは、目が肥えてると思うんですよ。だからどうするかっていうのはね、わかるかもしれないですけど、あれなんですよね。ぜひ皆さん、ここに書いてあるルームウェイ、ちなみにね、こうルームウェイ、これツイッターあるじゃないですか、ツイッター。これを皆さんでツイートして、どんだけこのセッションがすごかったかをツイッターでぜひばらまいてください。ちなみにハシコープの時にこういうことをやったら、ツイッターのルームウェイがツイッタートレンド入りしました。じゃあ皆さんの、ありがとうございます。じゃあ皆さんのパワーでぜひね、ほんまにガチでこのセッションすごいと思うんで、ぜひ皆さんツイートしまくってください。じゃあジェームスカミン。じゃあその前に皆さん、彼が希望したんでやりましょう。 OK？ シェフ。 OK！ ハイファイブ。
Thank you to Tsuyoshi-san for yet another great introduction. And thanks for coming today. I want to talk, I've been talking many times now during the conference, and you might hear the same things again. I want to talk a little bit about how we at Chef approach DevOps. How our customers use the practices of DevOps to be successful and really give you things that you can take home as lessons. And then I want to show you really how you do it, how you can, why infrastructure as code is so important. So Chef is a, we're a mature startup. We've been around for 7 or 8 years, and we've been there through the entire DevOps movement, and we've seen how it changed. We're based in Seattle, but we're an open source company. Over 70% of our company is remote. Most of the engineering team is remote. We sit on Skype or Zoom, we're on Slack, we're communicating remotely all the time. And that's sort of a really important part of our culture. And I think that's helped us a lot. We have great partnerships with companies like Microsoft, and together we can sort of help you put together a full set of DevOps solutions. So as I said, we were born with the DevOps movement. What does that really mean? Well, the practices of DevOps started in the web innovators, Amazon, Facebook, Etsy, Netflix, who were trying to disrupt and move fast. And as they did this, they saw sets of practices, lean, agile technologies, new tools, automation, that they needed to help them move quickly and give them that velocity. Now, not every company is like those companies. They had advantages. They hired from new. They didn't have legacy. They came and they built everything themselves. But they had certain patterns that could translate to every company. Every company's trying to do the same thing. They're trying to be successful. They're trying to move fast. They're trying to make their customers happy. And these practices, the patterns of DevOps success, we looked and we brought them together into a platform so that we can supply it to the enterprise. Some of that is software. Some of that is patterns of how you put software together. Some of that are ideas around how you can transform and change your teams. In all the talks we've talked about during the conference so far, we haven't really talked about technology. So you might not even really know what Chef is, apart from something you shout. Really, what we're doing at Chef is we give you ways to treat your infrastructure and your applications exactly the same. In a modern, cloud-first, mobile-first world, a change to your application or a change to your infrastructure in the cloud are the same. They both have the same ability to make your product run better or for it to stop working. So you should treat them the same way. Every change, adding more nodes, removing nodes, is just the same at the scale of your overall application as it is as deploying a new version. Also, when you come to the enterprise, you have this unique set of requirements. Every enterprise is under regulatory pressure. Every enterprise has external standards they must meet or internal security standards. So how do you take the ideas of compliance and how do you make sure your software, your auditors, your compliance teams are happy while you're starting to treat infrastructure as code? Because this is very different. So how do you treat your compliance as code as well, and what does that mean? So what we do is we bring one platform where you treat all these things the same, apply the same principles to them. Now, we're really proud of our partnership with Microsoft. We work very closely with the teams in Windows Server, in Azure, in DevTools, to make sure that Chef is the best DevOps platform for Microsoft technologies, that it works well and seamlessly across the entire wide suite of things which Microsoft provides. And really, what are we trying to do? So, we want to let you move quickly, but do it safely. Moving quickly is great, but not if it doesn't work. You want to increase the ability for you to ship changes and affect your business without killing your business by shipping something bad and shipping a security flaw. And we see three main components for this: cloud, automation, and culture. So cloud, really what you get, if you want to move quickly, you need the ability that dynamic infrastructure gives you. When we go into a customer and say, how long does it take to provision a virtual machine? And they'll go, or how long does it take to provision hardware? And it's like 7 months. How long does it take to provision a virtual machine? They go, oh, that's 7 months as well because it's the same process. But it doesn't have to be. How long does it take now to provision a machine in Azure? We hope the answer is not 7 months. We hope it's like 1 minute. And so as you start to move faster and faster, you can start to run experiments quicker. And this is really what it's about. Sam Guggenheimer from Microsoft yesterday, I think, summed up one of the sessions when he said, it's about how do you get feedback to changes you're making. If you make a change and you have to wait for a CD to ship, like Microsoft Office, a long time ago, and it's going to take 1 year before you get feedback, you can run one experiment a year. So how do you run one experiment a month, or one experiment a day, or 10 experiments a day? And so these were the ideas that the early web innovators brought together. How do I continually run experiments and do it safely? And they used the cloud for this. Now, of course, the first thing they ran into was, well, I can't do this manually anymore. So they moved to automation as a way of speed, but also then saw automation as a way of repeatability. So once you're able to look at how you package and automate things and move it quickly, you actually get a lot of benefits as well. If you go down the path of automation, well, you have to start versioning. You have to start using source code control. And this is a common trick that people use when rolling out DevOps. So you can say, we're going to do automation, but you actually do four or five things to get there. So, you know, you bring along all these other practices that improve you. It's not one practice will ever get you there. Automation needs versioning, it needs automatic rollout, it needs continuous delivery, and all of these help you go better. And then the third key aspect is culture. So now, how do I collaborate together when we're all moving quickly. So if you have a siloed teams, dev, ops, security, and they don't talk to each other, and something goes wrong, human nature says we blame the other team. So if that's our culture, as soon as we have a mistake, we slow down. What we want is when we have a mistake, we actually want to speed up. I don't know if you know, if you've seen this picture at Facebook in their new office, and so they have this slogan, go fast and break things. And they have it on 30-foot high painted on the wall of their new office. And every day you come in, you see, go fast and break things. Why do you break things? Well, if you're not breaking things, you're not experimenting. You're not moving fast enough. So again, this is one of these counterintuitive ideas that help us move faster. So what happens when it breaks? If you have a strong, healthy culture, the first thing when something goes wrong is you get together, understand, fix it, roll it out. So the idea is when Amazon said we were doing 25 deploys a day, not all of them were perfect. John Allspaal, who was at Etsy, again, who stood up first and began to talk about some of these ideas, he says the part of your brain that makes you do the good deploy, that makes you write perfect code, is exactly the same part of the brain that's going to make you write bad code. There's no special, if I do it like this, I'm always going to write code. It's just the way it is. Some things will work, some things won't, you'll forget. The ability that you have to react to that and fix the problem is actually the key to moving fast and moving safely. And having a culture where you can examine together what went wrong, have a blameless postmortem, understand together and improve is what lets you keep accelerating. So that's how you get in this cycle of moving faster and faster and faster. And as you start to move faster, what you'll find is other people want to join in as well. You know, our human nature as engineers is we want to do the fun bits of our job, and we don't want to do the boring bits of our job. So how can we automate the boring bits and do the fun bits? And if you're in the team doing the fun bits, suddenly everybody else wants to be on your team as well. Everybody else wants their team to work that way. So again, culture can spread very, very fast. Now, that's sort of philosophy, and philosophy is great. But what's even better is facts and figures. So Nicole Forsgren, who writes the State of the DevOps report every year, she's a statistician, did some analysis of companies who had adopted DevOps practices. And what it says is that, yes, you do more deployments, you ship faster, you have faster mean time to recover. But what you also get is more profit, bigger market share, and bigger business productivity. The market cap of companies who are at the forefront of these technology adoptions, their market cap goes up. So when you have to go to your boss and justify, why am I doing DevOps? It's like, do you want the share price to go up, or do you want the share price to go down? And hopefully he says up. But you know, so this is really good. DevOps is good for the business. The other thing about DevOps is good for you as an engineer. And I think this is a really important thing to say as well. When we see teams being successful with DevOps, those teams get more responsibility in the organization. They get wider spread of control. They get to be the champions, the influencers, and help people. And that's a great part of your job to do, to help other people to succeed. So DevOps is good for you as a practitioner, and it's good for your business as well. So how do we roll this up together? So when Chef started, we were doing configuration management. How do you set up the provision a machine to be in a given state? And that's like over at the right-hand side of the picture under Chef server. And Chef is a toolkit. So it's written in Ruby, the client. You can extend it in as many ways as possible. Whatever you want to do, you can extend it. It's really a set of tools that you can compose together. And as we work with enterprises, what they said was, well, that's great, but actually we need some standards. Or, well, you guys are the people who know how to do DevOps. Can you tell us how to put these together? So, you know, as a technology moved from the early adopters and the tinkerers through to sort of mature organizations, you want to sort of codify all those best practices. And the big one that came up was like please, how do you define a consistent workflow for moving change all the way from the developer workstation into production? Now, you might be using a huge variety of tools, but what you want is the workflow to look the same. So we put together a product called Chef Delivery, and it's really an opinionated workflow for how you test, build, and deploy software. The other thing is that if you begin to say that infrastructure is code, you have to treat your developers well, the people who write code. So we brought together all the best open source tools, many of them not written by Chef. And that's the great thing about an open source community. Our community contributed their knowledge by writing tools and putting them together, and we shipped them in a development kit, Chef development kit. So it has the core Chef tools, but it has tools like Food Critic, RuboCop that I'll talk about. You know, it's all based on Ruby. It's got RSpec. It's got extensions to RSpec for testing in different phases in the lifecycle. And we could bring all that together and give it as one installation. So one click, install all the best tools and know how to use them. And then provide pre-baked generators that can build you the structure with all these tools already configured for you. Because this is treating your developers well. You know, so like you want them to move, to pick up the technologies faster and move faster. And I think this is a great lesson, I mean, for anybody. Like, thinking about not just your tool, but all the things that your users have to use around it, and how can you get all that to them together? And then we added another component. So DevOps is great. People might have heard of things like DevSecOps, where you bring in security, or DevSec Compliance Ops, or DevNetOps. You know, this is another example that DevOps was seen as successful, and now everybody wants to do it. And that's also great. So one of the biggest problems we saw was whenever you're moving quickly in an organization, how do you do audit and compliance? You would move really fast and ship things, and you're about to put it in production. The auditors go, no, we have to check. So the approach here is very DevOps as well. Bring them in. Make them part of the team. Make them part of the DevOps team. So when we show the demo at the end, there's a sort of very interesting thing. We talk about testing and test-driven development. When you look at compliance, it's essentially their tests. Is this port open? Is this package installed? Does this firewall rule? They're no different. So we wrote some tools called InSpec that basically make compliance just be tests. So we teach the compliance team to do TDD as well. We don't call them tests, we call them controls, because that's the language of the compliance and audit team. But they're writing tests, they're just being developers. And I think that's important. Just like operations people become developers when you have dynamic infrastructure, making your other teams be developers as well, and giving them the tools that they can do it and do it safely and quickly, is what actually helps. So we launched a product last year called Chef Compliance, which I'll show later, which allows you to basically describe your compliance as a set of tests. And then in this toolkit approach, Chef sort of works anywhere. So because it's pluggable, it can work on any cloud, it can work on bare metal, it can work on any runtime, it can work on any workload. So this is another great advantage of open source. Many of these contributions came from our community and not from us. A great example, when we wrote InSpec, and we launched it last year, within 2 days, we had a pull request from somebody at IBM adding AIX support. Like, we went, okay, that's great. We never would have known how to write AIX support. So you can immediately, you know, bring together the community around the tool. And we've spent a lot of work integrating to the wide Microsoft ecosystem that exists. From Chef and Azure to how do you work in a hybrid environment. We all know that while Azure is going to be amazing for some workloads right now and over time for more and more workloads, we all know that not every legacy app can move to the cloud. So one of the challenges is in any tool that you use or any system you use, how do you deal with the hybrid environment? How do you deal when you're in Azure and you've also got an installation on site? How do you make it look the same? We've got great support with Windows Server, and again, all our tools run natively on Windows. So how does this work? How do we tap into sort of Azure? So we've got native chef integration in the Azure portal. If you go and create a virtual machine, you can directly install one click chef client onto it. We integrate with sort of Azure SDKs and PowerShell. We have plugins that will let you create VMs that we'll show you later. How you can basically, from a command line, create a VM in Azure very quickly and very simply. And also, all our products are available in the Azure Marketplace for you to consume directly as a service. So one click and consume the Chef server. And again, this is all about getting you to a point quicker where you're being productive. How do we take the friction out of deploying systems to you? Let you easily consume all of the tools you need. Try them out, find the ones that work for you, put together a stack. This is a scenario we see a lot, actually, as well. So how do you take a traditional data center and migrate it to a combination of a modern data center using the latest Microsoft technology, so Windows 2012, eventually Windows 2016, with Hyper-V, using PowerShell DSC, desired state configuration, so using all of these advanced technologies quickly, and then taking the workloads that are appropriate and migrating them to Azure. So you can use Chef's first-class Microsoft integrations to move things both from the data center to your modern data center infrastructure and, where appropriate, migrate workloads to Azure and make sure that they work together and are connected. We treat Windows, we come from a Linux background. Chef first worked on Linux. But really, we treat now Windows and Linux as both first-class environments. Features are rolled out on both at the same time. In fact, we probably roll out more Windows features following the Microsoft roadmap than we do Linux features. So the full Chef developer experience is available on Windows. We're able to integrate with all of our tools to it. So let's talk about some of our customers and how they actually are successful with Chef. So Target's a great example. They're a joint customer with Microsoft, and we work very closely together. And this was, and this I think is an interesting one because it's probably the easiest way that you can get a win using DevOps tooling. So the things that, like, if you start and want to do a proof of concept internally around DevOps, a good thing to tackle is application deployment. Traditionally, normally, it's a highly manual process. It's also a highly error-prone process. If you have to manually deploy over a set of machines, make sure they get reconfigured, make sure things reboot. And also, the amount of time can go down very, very, very quickly. So something that manually with a checklist might take 2 days, once you spend a couple of weeks to automate it, you can do it in 30 minutes. So what we saw here was the cost of deploys went down from over $1 million to do 200 deploys to about $4,000. Because they automated it. So they put in the effort to automate it, and then subsequent deploys become very, very cheap. And when you roll out that cost across all the deploys, you really begin to get efficiencies. And the cost even to automate is not that expensive, especially if you have an existing app and you've got some tools like Inspect that let you help you describe the current state of the application, and then it's test-driven development. So you can do test-driven development. Normally, you write the tests first. If you've got legacy infrastructure, you can write the tests against that infrastructure and then write the code to make sure the tests match. With Azure, you can deploy it quickly and see, does it actually work, and you begin to iterate. So there's an example of how you can use automation, TDD, and cloud to start iterating fast and then apply it to what was a very expensive and manual process. Another great example, looking at it from a different direction. So Intuit, who are a financial services company in the United States, they do your tax for you. So things like TurboTax, or everybody in the States has to file taxes every year, and they do the software. And they grew by buying more products in the same sort of area. So they bought tax and accounting software for small businesses, tax for large businesses. And they grew up all these different companies who were sort of doing the same thing. They were in the same application domain, but they worked completely differently in silos. When the companies came in, they didn't make them change their development practices. So they had five QA teams who all ran their infrastructure slightly differently. They had five development teams who all deployed their applications slightly differently. And really, this was a story of culture. So they had a big problem, so they needed to improve their security across everything. Again, this is a very common DevOps pattern that I think somebody mentioned. Using something like a security problem to help drive better practices across an organization. So turning what was not a good situation into a reason to do something better. So they realized the only way that they could tackle their security problem was to get all the teams working in the same way and using some common tools, and also to move to the cloud so that they could then deploy it fast. So they have a team, internal DevOps evangelism team. They run monthly meetups. They run weekly phone calls. They invite external people in, but most of the presentations are by the internal teams, talking about how they, in their company, use the tools to solve their problems, and they talk about it in their own language, in the terms that all the other developers understand. So it's very hard for me to come into your company and know what's your term for your QA environment versus your prod, and what's your automatic deployment tool. So I can give you general examples, but you can take those and translate them into the language, and then you spread that internally. So this was really a story of how they brought together the best parts of their internal culture and shared. And the interesting thing was, when they began talking to each other, they realized a lot of them were already using Chef. They just didn't know any of the other people who were using Chef either. They already had best practices in some of the teams that the other teams could adopt immediately. So taking, again, what the current best practices are, there are, and then spreading them across the team. Another example, again, around application deployment, how can you make things faster? So MSN, Microsoft used Chef internally to deploy MSN. So they had a 50% accelerated jump in the number of times they could deploy their application on Azure. Gannett, who are, again, a big publishing company, you know, take a deploy from weeks down to minutes. So these are great things for you to think about and look at your current deployments, how you do them, and how you might be able to speed them up. I really like this story. So this was a major financial institute in the US, and they were they had a team who was already using Chef, and this was during the point that they were migrating Chef out to the rest of the organization. They had decided everybody knew what Chef was. Shell Shock came along, SSH bug, 2014, came on a Thursday. On the Friday, the team who was already on Chef, one person did the fix, and they rolled it out in 15 minutes. The other team spent 2 weekends and all the time in between rolling it across the other machines. And the problem they found was that because they didn't do this very often, like, they had people whose job was log on to these 50 machines and run this patch. The network configuration had changed since the last time they did it. Their accounts weren't enabled. They had been disabled for some other reason. And all the time was spent going through these hoops before they actually got on the machine. And then they would do it manually one by one. So the time was very long. So the team who was already on DevOps practices and doing this had their 2 weekends at home. And the team who didn't, unfortunately, spent a lot of time patching machines and trying to work out where they were. So, Chef, I'm going to now sort of talk a little bit more around the specifics of what Chef is and what the code looks like so that when we do the demo, it sort of makes sense. There's a lot of different components to Chef. One of the interesting pieces here, all the components in blue are open source and freely available. You can take the open source components of Chef, and I've done this before I went to Chef, we used open source Chef, and you can run a highly successful business with it. And that's really important. We don't want to lock you in to using our software. And I think this is something in the DevOps movement that's very different from traditional IT product companies. We want our biggest competitor to be our own open source product. We want to earn your business every day. We want it to be a subscription business that you can turn off at any time and use the open source tools if you're not getting value, because that keeps us honest and make sure we give you exactly what you want. And I think this is very common in open source companies who are building on top of it, and it really drives us to do what's best for you. You can always move away and still have a great chef experience, and we will help you with it. In Orange, we have some of the tools at the top that are the add-ons that we think give value for enterprises. So delivery, we've already spoken about. How do you do high availability and replication? So things that are really important for an enterprise scenario. Tools for user interfaces, management consoles. Chef analytics, which is how you get visibility into what's going on. This is another important point. So let's say you take those, you're the large bank and you take the 60,000 machines. You're now moving faster. You now need to know what's happening. So it's really important to take all of this data and be able to visualize it. It's also, so Mitchell Hashimoto talked about this morning, you know, the future of DevOps is how can you use all the data that we know about the changes in your infrastructure to do things better? How can we hook it up with cognitive services on Azure to actually predict when things are going wrong? How do we sort of begin to leverage that as we move forward? The first is you have to be able to see it and get the data out. So we try and make sure that everything that we do in your machines are exposed out to you so that you can use that data to improve what you're doing. And then, as I said, our ecosystem, our partners, our community provide a very, very important part of this. So let's talk about the Chef server that we're going to show you now during the demo. At the heart, the Chef server is a way that stores the policy and the configuration for what your infrastructure looks like. Node A should be a web server. It should be running this application. Node B should be a database. This is its failover pair. Here's my front-end load balancer, and it should talk to these. So you begin to talk about how the interaction between your services are at a high level. You begin to describe the components of your infrastructure as code. And once it's code, you can now start to modify it, and you can now start to change it and experiment with it. On every single node inside your infrastructure, we run a client. The client pulls from the server its configuration and then converges to it. So what does it mean that it converges? So let's say the configuration I want is I'm going to write a file and I'm going to start a service. Well, you describe those as blocks. And it's idempotent, which means it's going to only do the operation if it needs to do it. So if the service is already started, it won't do anything. And this is all built in. So again, you want to do the minimum amount of work on the node so that you can let it run for business. So Chef, our company's called Chef, our product's called Chef. As you may have guessed, every piece is aimed around cooking. So we have cookbooks, which represent how you might configure a service. So we have a cookbook for configuring IIS. We have a cookbook for configuring the Apache web server, a cookbook for Postgres. And inside there are recipes which describe the sequence of steps you might want to do to install it, to install an application into it. And then you have something we call resources. And resources are the low-level building block. So a resource is this system state that you define. This is where you, so at this level, you're writing Ruby. So this is just a Ruby DSL. So you're describing the state you want the resource to be in. You're not saying how to get there. Chef knows how to get there by the definition of how the resource is. So on Linux, you say package Apache install. So on Red Hat, this is going to use yum. If it's on Ubuntu, it's going to use app. So it's going to use whatever the underlying package is, system, and you don't really care. Again, on Windows, so you're going to say Windows feature and install something else. So you're saying action install. You're going to say, you can begin to imagine with this sort of model in your head, like what a service would look like. So how do I start Apache? Service Apache, action, start. So it's a very, very consistent way to describe operating system primitives. And here, in a recipe, you begin to put together all the bits that do it. So again, what we want to do is we want to install a package. We want to write out a template with our configuration file. And then afterwards, we want to start it. You see how it looks on Linux. You see how it looks on Windows. So it looks very, very similar. No matter what operating system you're on, you expose the primitives in the same way, and you can put them together. And then you build these together into cookbooks. So cookbooks have got recipes in them. They've got template files. And they've got some metadata around it that describes that cookbook and lets you share it. So let's talk about the software development practices that we can bring in when we're doing infrastructure that help us improve. So what I like about automation in companies like Chef and what I do is like we often don't have to do anything new. We just have to look back at the history of software development and say, what worked there, and bring it over and do it again. So TDD revolutionized how you released software. And it took this simple idea that basically said, the earlier you catch a defect, the cheaper it is. So if I can catch a defect as soon as I write something, that's really cheap. How can I catch the defect before I even write the code? So, you know, write your test, make the code work, keep going around that cycle, and sort of, there are many things this gives you. So, you know, clearly, your code's going to be stable. It's going to do what you say it does. But also, you know, the research is showing that you get simpler code, more understandable code. You've got provable improvements in quality and lowering of cost to do it. So you sort of get this cycle that, you know, you're going to write some code, you're going to write some unit tests, you're going to go into pre-prod, you're going to write your integration tests, you're going to make sure they all run, you're going to go to production, and hey, it's great. And then we think, well, let's just do that, you know, on our infrastructure as well. So, you know, we begin to get versioning, documentation, testing, we get quality, we get velocity. This is all great. Well, what actually happened when we sort of did this? Well, normally what happened is you wrote some code, you know, before, you sort of looked at it and went, well, that looks okay. And then you go to pre-prod and you go, well, that looks okay. And then you go to prod and everything breaks. So, you know, how do we get here? You know, what we're trying to do is put in all the best practices and go from here and now get to here. So, again, the reason we want to do it, we're going to move faster. So, again, it kind of comes back to think about your problem and then think about the practices that help. Here, we're really addressing velocity and quality. You know, and again, it's DevOps, so we never just look for one thing. We never just say move fast. We always say move fast and get something else as well. So how do we sort of put one practice in that gives us lots of benefits? So what we do, we talked about Chef Development Kit, ChefDK, and really what we're giving is test-driven infrastructure in a box. So these are all the pieces that you might need put together to let you test your infrastructure as code. So what do we want to do? We want to look at our code correctness. So there are tools. Some of these are standard Ruby tools. And this is the great thing as well about Chef just being based on Ruby. We can take tools like RuboCop for our Ruby code linting standards and just use them directly. We also have tools like FoodCritic, which let you sort of look at the Chef-specific bits. We've got tools for unit testing, tools for deploying, and then sort of we get this wrapper that puts it all together. So let's look at these tools one by one. So RuboCop is a standard Ruby static code analyzer. It uses the exact standard community Ruby guidelines. And I think this is one of the important things that when we look at infrastructure as code. Traditionally, we wrote shell scripts. There were no standards for how we do it. Everybody looks different. And so as we move to a language that more developers know, we can just take their code standards. But then we customize it for what we want to do. So, you know, here's a great example. Somebody thinks that they're writing Java and not Ruby, and they've done, you know, camel case and not snake case. So, you know, these are just standard. And so you define this across, and probably your development team has already defined all of these for you. Now that's great for your code, but what about the resources we've just written? So we've talked about that Chef gives you a standard set of resources, but you're allowed to extend them, and you might not always know what all the right options are. So Food Critic is a static code analyzer that checks for Chef cookbook style guidelines. So this was a tool that was written by our community and not by us. So it's interesting, in an open source community, our community told us what the style guidelines were, not the company telling them. So they worked out what the style guidelines were, they wrote a tool, somebody wrote a tool, and we put it all together. So these are things that, you know, ensure consistency and also reduce bugs. So, you know, Food Critic Rule 001, the first one ever written, use strings and not symbols. This was interesting because lots of people who were Ruby developers wrote symbols everywhere because that was the Ruby way. What happened was, when you had lots of system administrators who had never written Ruby, they're going, what's this colon thing at the start and what does it mean? So the community decided among themselves that they would go against a Ruby best practice and define their own best practice because it was better for their community. So you can always want to override these rules to make it work for your community. There's another good one. So FC004, use a service resource to start and stop services. The other interesting thing was, because it's Ruby, you can do everything. So people would just do system calls. They would just do a system call to start the service because they could. And that's great, it gets the work done, but it's not idempotent. It's always going to run every single time. There's no checks. So again, you start to limit the scope of the full language a little bit to make sure that everybody understands it and it's done consistently. Chef spec is a unit testing framework, so it's based on RSpec, and it gives you primitives, RSpec matchers, that let you talk about Chef resources. Was this resource called with this action? Was this recipe included across? It runs locally. So in the example I'm going to show you deploying a .NET app onto Windows, and I'm going to do all my testing and all my unit testing on a Mac running macOS, because it doesn't matter. So it just looks like RSpec. Again, another great thing for us, you know, we can leverage the great TDD tools that are already there in Ruby. I think this has been one of the biggest accelerators for us to do TDD in Chef. Ruby has a great TDD attitude and community and approach already. And again, we could just leverage that. So here, if we look at this, we're just basically having one thing saying, we're going to do a run, and we expect that that run will install a given package. So the next thing is, how do you actually now start to build infrastructure quickly and dynamically? Now, this is all great, but if you have to put it into a pre-production environment to run it, that's very expensive. So we built a community tool called Test Kitchen that uses HashiCorp's Vagrant underneath it as its main provider, its first provider, and it lets you create VMs using Vagrant locally or create VMs remotely on Azure, AWS, on VMware, on the platform of your choice. So whatever your virtualization platform is, it's going to let you create it, and if you don't have one, you can use Vagrant. So it's going to let you create a realistic test environment and then have run tests against it. So you can run a multitude of tests. You can run things like BATS, which is a shell script-based testing system. You can run RSpec, you can run server spec, you can run inspec. So again, you're now going to be able to run your tests wherever they are across it. And these are going to run in the actual. So you've done unit testing, and now you're doing integration testing. So you're going to be able to check that actually what you think it's going to do actually happens and test all this locally. And again, this is giving you velocity. You don't need to go and ask for any resources to do this. You don't need access to systems. So in fact, the app I took, you know, I took an app which one of our product managers had written, and I was able to download it at the start of the week and fire it up in my box, and I didn't have to go and do anything, and run all the examples and then move it to Azure. So, you know, a very typical type of movement that you're going to be doing anyway in real life. So let's try and put it all together, everything we've said. So what we're going to do is I'm going to test and deploy a simple .NET web app that we downloaded from Microsoft Developer Network, Fourth Coffee. It's a very simple website. We're going to use RuboCop to check out the syntax and the coding policies. We're going to use ChefSpec to write unit tests. We're going to use Test Kitchen to launch and configure an Azure instance. And we're going to use InSpec to do integration testing. I had a bonus here, and I think our time is good. So I'm also going to show how we can use Chef Compliance to actually also remotely scan that machine and check. So let me sit down and switch over. Okay. So let me look. So this is my cookbook here running in Visual Studio Code. Oh, and that was the wrong button. I can't. And here's the structure that I told you about before. So what we have are recipes. I have a recipe which basically knows how to install the software. So you can see these very, very common resources. And some of the resources are standard. So template that defines how you do a template. Some of them are part of the extension. So this installs an IIS pool. So somebody has written an IIS cookbook that exposes these resources to you. So this is, again, community sharing. You don't start from nothing. We have a public community site called Supermarket, supermarket.chef.io. And on there are hundreds of cookbooks to configure everything you could think of. And they're a great starting point whenever you want to go. Experts in those systems have written cookbooks that then you can use. So we're going to set up a pool in IIS, and we're going to also configure the site. We want to be secure. We're also going to remove the default site that comes as part of IIS. The people who wrote the IIS cookbook handily wrote a recipe for us that describes all the steps that you have to do that. So I don't have to think about that. So I'm just going to fire off the build, because it takes about 7 minutes to run to set up the thing. So I've got a nice fast network here. So what I'm going to do is actually use Test Kitchen to converge a machine that is running remotely inside Azure. So I've already created the machine just to make sure so it didn't take too long. What it's going to do is it's going to take all my cookbook files and all the dependencies, move it over into Azure, install the Chef client, and then do the run for me. So this is going to take about 7 minutes, so I'm going to show you some of the other bits and then come back again. I'm going to show you, first of all, Chef Compliance. So I have a machine that I already set up beforehand. So it's a demo. And you know, I'm a chef, so I always make sure I cook one beforehand in case the one that I'm cooking right now doesn't work. But I'm going to look at this, and I'm going to go and scan this with a set of tests. Now, because it's security, we're actually going to call these security controls. I've written a set of tests that basically describe how I think my app should be when it's running securely. And I'm going to run a scan against that machine running in Azure from, again, this compliance server running inside Azure. It takes about 20 seconds. Okay. And what we're seeing in the one that we've run already is that here's the test we're doing. So is .NET installed properly? Is the web server installed? Is the IIS service actually running? Is port 80 open? So we see that this box is good. We're going to be able to go and look at the box that I'm configuring right now. And what it's going to hopefully say, if everything works, is that it's not compliant because the app isn't running yet. Yep. So here we go. There are critical issues with this server because nothing's working. So we're in a good state. Let's go and look at these tests that we're running. So here are the five tests. We want to, you know, what are these actually doing? So this is a InSpec control. So InSpec is a library that was heavily influenced by ServerSpec. So what you're seeing in here is it looks like ServerSpec. And it really takes the strong concepts of Ruby test-driven development that things like RSpec and ServerSpec had, and makes it work well for people who do compliance. So they're able to, for instance, say the impact of this. Is this a critical issue? Is this a minor issue? Is this a major issue? It allows to bundle all these tests together inside profiles. So I can say this server should be at this profile, and here's a set of checks. And it can do things like, so it can describe the actual running state of the system. Is this package installed? It can check, like, is this port listening right now? It can also check, is this port not listening right now? Which is really special. When you think about it, like, how would I write a Chef check to make sure that a port's not running? Like, I don't know how to get there. It could be any server running there, any service, so it's not easy to do. So Inspect lets you describe all these things that typically a security person wants to do. And we call them controls, but they're tests. Here we're helping the compliance and audit team to do test-driven development. They were able to write the tests on what my secure system should look like, and I could run them before I even installed the system. So I can then install it, and I can know I will be compliant even before I've checked the code into Git. I can run it all locally and show that my application is going to be compliant. And we ship with a lot of standard controls. So some baseline security, we at Center for Internet Security, baseline standards for Red Hat, for CentOS, for Windows. We can import any SCAP content, so things from Windows System Center. We can import those profiles and you can run them against your system. And more importantly, you can modify them. So one of the issues you see in compliance is that very often, everything is great from somebody else's rules, except you need to change one or two. So you can say, take in all of these rules that are external, and now make my alterations, and explain that as code. And there's a commit log that says, this is why I did it, and then you can show that to your auditors. So let's go back and look at our code. We just ran those checks. So those checks are actually also, the controls are inside my code. So I'm going to run those whenever I get the system up and running locally here. So I don't need the compliance server running. I can just run them here. What are they checking? So let's have a look at our recipe. So again, we're including this. We're running some things. So I'm going to use Visual Studio Code to actually run my test tasks against this. And it tells me I have two problems. So this is great. I have a problem here where I'm not meeting standards and I'm using brackets the wrong way. So again, if I'm not a Ruby expert and there's like three ways to do it, I might use the wrong one and then my code looks different and somebody else is not a Ruby expert might not understand it. And I think we have another problem in default where we don't have a space. So what you're seeing here is we're using Visual Studio Code, and we're using the Chef extension for Visual Studio Code to get highlighting and also to integrate with FoodCritic and RoboCop. So I'm going to run my tests again. So this time it worked. RoboCop ran properly. And now I'm going to run my unit tests. So here we go. We're checking all of those. We're checking the unit tests we want to do. So did my recipe actually, this is the most important, like did my recipe, is it actually going to properly remove that default site? Is it going to add the pool? Is it going to add the site? So let's go back. Oh, wow, that was very fast. So when I was checking this on the conference network, it was taking 7 minutes, and now I'm on the fast speaker network, it took 1.5 minutes. So that was great. Let's have a look at what this did. So let me just go back up here. So what we did was we ran and we pulled over all the cookbooks that we needed. So we have my fourth coffee cookbook, which was my code that I wrote, but I'm leaning heavily on the IIS cookbook and the Windows cookbook that somebody else wrote. And I'm not a Windows expert, and I'm amazed that I got a Windows demo working today. But this was all due to the great people in the community who wrote these for me. We are running desired state configuration, so we're running PowerShell. So let's have a look at that, because I think this is a really interesting thing for somebody coming from a Windows background. When you talk to many Windows administrators, they go, do I need to know Chef? Do I need to know Ruby? Well, the answer is no, they don't. So we have great integration with PowerShell. So you can either write a PowerShell script and drop it straight into the middle of your Chef code. So you get all the advantage of Ruby. You can iterate, you can loop, you can do conditionals, but then you can call PowerShell inside. And if you have existing PowerShell, you can just move that into Chef, and then integrate that with resources where you need it. You can also use PowerShell DSC directly. DSC resources map into Chef if you've got PowerShell 5. I'm running PowerShell 4 on this box for the app, but if you're running PowerShell 5, you can use DSC directly. So this is a great example how you can combine Microsoft technologies like desired state configuration and Chef together. And then I'm going to move all my code over as well. And then let's just go, and we're going to check. And let me see. Let's rerun it. And here we go. We have our sample app run up and running. So let's go back to compliance. We now have our app. Here's the live, which failed last time. And we're going to scan, and we're going to do the exact same thing. We're going to say, can I run my fourth coffee against it? Did I get the right machine? It's a live demo. Of course, it's going to fail. It had to fail. It's the end of the day in a live demo. Well, I've shown you it works on the good one. I've probably put the wrong IP address in. OK, I'm going to let the demo gods win this time, and I'm going to move on, because we've got only a few minutes. So what I showed there was how you could take all these concepts of test-driven development, and as a bonus, also get your compliance and security teams using them without them even knowing. We're going to allow you to go faster. We showed you how to do automation. We showed you how to do it on Azure and run an application in the cloud. And really, what we're trying to do is imply that everything is code. Your infrastructure is code, containers is code, policy is code, process is code, and then apply everything you know from software development on top of that. Don't invent new things. Take all the great knowledge you have as software developers and engineers and apply that to your entire system. So there's lots of places you can go and learn more. Learn.chef.io is our online training site. There's great examples for both Windows and Linux on how you can use it to automate, how you can use tools like delivery that I showed you as well, how to use compliance and analytics. We've got a great doc site. We've got the community site where supermarket.chef.io where you can get examples. I would also encourage you to go to meetups, go talk to other DevOps practitioners, and learn from them as well. Hear as many voices as possible. Find your trusted partners for DevOps who you work together with, and go and succeed. Thank you.